This is Q1 Go, the theater show, episode number 16. What makes an actor? I'll delve into the question in a personal way and get to the bottom of it. I'm Mike Blackston, and this is Q1 Go, the theater show, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of theater and gives you an up-close look into the world of live performance through stories, topics, opinions, and a whole lot of fun. Wrong Window opened last weekend at the historic Gilbert Theater, and Tony has been wrapped up in that as well as rehearsals for the Sousification of Romeo and Juliet. So it's going to just be me for this episode, episode number 16, and I want to ponder the question, what makes an actor? I beat my head against the wall to try and figure out what to talk about in this episode because I knew I was going to be doing this alone, and I wanted to make sure I came up with something that was captivating yet personal, relevant, yet sincere. And so for the longest time, I tried to get my head wrapped around the subject. What can I talk about so I could just get started recording? And I began to ask myself what I'd like to hear a fellow stage rat talk about. I said, what would I want to listen to? And I asked a question, what made me an actor in the first place? Why did I even start doing this, and why am I so completely engulfed in the need for those lights to shine on me? Am I a storyteller, or am I a narcissist? I started thinking about that. Am I just some cocky guy who can't stand to not be in front of somebody? And it hit me. That's the episode. That's what I need to talk about. Sure, it'll be probably a little more on the psychological side, but maybe you're asking yourself the same question. So I came up with an outline to follow. Sure, it will be probably more on the psychological side of things, but maybe you're asking yourself the same questions. So I started thinking about it, and I wanted to go back as far into my memories as I possibly could. And the way I see it, I was made for the stage by my mother and God. I was made for it. Very early in my childhood, like when I was like 4 or 5 years old, Mom heard me singing, and she said, Michael can sing, and she decided to nurture a love of performing in me. And the first way she did that was to make sure I stood by the piano a lot and practiced singing as she played. I remember that there were times I did enjoy it. There were times that I wanted to sing certain songs she had in her list. It's funny, we joke now about her page-turning capabilities because my mom could read music and she could play sheet music, and she could do it very well if she practiced the song, but if it was not something she was used to, she couldn't turn the page herself. And as a child, I didn't have the discipline or the wherewithal to turn the pages for her. I just stood there and did my thing. So she'd start playing the song, and we'd get to the end of the page, and it would pause, turn the page, and then pick it back up. And we still laugh about that to this day. But she made me stand by the piano and practice songs that she had picked out that she knew was in my vocal range for me to learn and to learn how to control my breath and do all the singing and things that I needed to do to improving my singing, and I did enjoy it. And there were also times, though, that I wanted to be doing something else, but she insisted. And I'm very glad that she did, because I look back on those memories now with a fondness. It's a special connection that I have with my mom, remembering standing up beside that old Kimball piano, the little spinet upright, probably more like a teaching piano, and we sang. I was also made to sing at church. A lot of those songs that she was having me sing were church songs, and she was prepping me to be able to get up in front of the congregation. She wanted to show me off, I guess, in front of the congregation, and I would sing in front of the church congregation. Now, right now, I gladly sing at church. I love to offer my voice as a mode of worship, but as a child, I didn't want to do that. I got really nervous, and it always meant learning a new song, which meant more time at the piano. Now the response in my soul that was engaged early on has made me appreciate singing for God in a way that might not have happened if I hadn't been made to stand in the pulpit and sing those songs in front of the congregation. So that was really where I started performing. That's my earliest experiences with singing in church. There were also a couple of church plays that I have pictures of that I remember being in. I think most kids, if you spent time growing up in church, if you were one of those people who were in church as a child, you were in the church play. I remember being dressed up as one of the wise men, and I have a picture of that somewhere with me dressed up as one of the wise men. So I also did a little bit of theatrics in the church for those, but Actually, I spent a little while in my youth. I don't recall how long it was, but there was a troop in my local community called the Chickadees, and it was four young kids to teach them performance and stagecraft. And again, mom. Now, my memories here are cloudy. I don't know if I enjoyed this or not. I can't remember. I can't remember if I liked it or not. I don't have any actual memories of the performances. And I do have, well, I shouldn't say I don't have any memories. I do have one memory of coming out on stage, and I think there's a picture of this somewhere, dressed as an enormous cupcake for a production of Hansel and Gretel. And that's the type of things we did. We did little children's shows for the community, and it was called the Chickadees. And so they were responsible for my very first performances as I trotted myself out there like a big old cupcake. Mom also got me involved in multiple talent shows. Some of them were just talent shows. People came and paid, and they raised money for local charities. But there were a couple of them that I did that were competitions. 1 year and then the year after that. I don't recall competing a third year. So I think it was the Optimist Club, I believe, was the organization they were raising money for with this talent show. But it was a competition, and they gave away first, second, third place prize. I remember in that first competition, I sang Rainbow Connection from The Muppet Show and Tomorrow from Annie. And I won first place in the children's category. I won second place overall. And the reason I only won second place overall was because there was a clogger there who had brought a group of his friends that cheered like crazy people every time he turned around and whipped his knee in circles really, really fast. They just went wild and went crazy and applauded, and I think the judges were going by applause anyway. But the guy was talented. I shouldn't say that. That's diva talk. I don't mean to sound that way. The guy was a very talented clogger, and he may have clogged better than I sang. But anyway, that was the very first talent show, and I won first place in the children's category, won second place in the overall. And the very next year, I was in the same talent show. They did it a second year. And this time, I don't know if they had an overall or what they did. I do remember taking home second place, and this time it was to a girl who is a young little girl. I don't want to even talk about it. But from there, mom had me doing little things around the community. I remember my first solo performance, dressing as a cowboy, probably 5, maybe 6 years old, and performing Dead Eye Dick. It's just a little children's song called Dead Eye Dick. And I performed it dressed as a cowboy in a cowboy hat, with a horse on a stick and a toy pistol. And I was, like I say, around 5 or 6 years old. And I can still remember most of that song. No, I will not sing it at this time. But that was my first solo performance I remember. And then from there, I began to audition for main stage community theater shows and did that for a few years until I became a teenager. I think in the first and second episodes of Q1 Go, me and Tony were talking about our history and what got us into theater in the first place. So I won't go all into that, but mom had me audition for Oliver, and I got a part in Fagin's Gang. And then our family did a lot of theater, and so they would drive an hour across the... We lived in Georgia, and we would drive across the Georgia-South Carolina line into South Carolina to a theater that was a fairly large community theater with a really good director named Bill Splawn, who's since passed on. He was a wonderful director and taught me a lot of what I know, and was where I got a lot of the way that I direct when I direct a show. And my family would do all those shows, and we ended up doing Annie, Get Your Gun, and Music Man. I did a show called Peace Child over there, Shenandoah. And so I spent a lot of time over there, but then there came a time when I just didn't care for it anymore. I was becoming the angsty teenager, and I didn't want to do theater anymore. I went through a redneck stage, to be honest with you. I'm from Georgia, and so it's really easy to get into that redneck stage. And as a teenager, that's what I wanted to do. So for a few years, I fell out of it. And then I've told you the story before of how my love for the theater was rekindled during a trip to New York City. In a nutshell, my mom had always dreamed of seeing the Macy's Parade, and she married my stepdad, and they were newlyweds, and he decided to take the family to New York City. And she said, we're going to go see Cats. I did not want to go see Cats. And I begged for her to let me stay, but she said, stay in the hotel. And she said, no, you're going. And I fell in love with it. It just completely reawakened my love for theater. And So from that moment on, I loved theater. Now, I didn't get involved with theater at that point, but I had a love for it. I loved to listen to it. I had not realized at that time that you could actually get the soundtrack to these shows and listen to them anytime you wanted to. And so I started looking for those. I think the first one I bought was Cats. And then I bought Phantom of the Opera. And we went to see Phantom of the Opera and Annie and the Buddy Holly story in Atlanta at the Fabulous Fox Theater. And so it just things like that. We went to the theater a lot and I loved it. I went all of that backstory to tell you those were the things that were the seeds of me becoming an actor. But I would not have considered myself an actor until in my 20s. I met my wife on the radio, and I'll tell you that story really quickly. If anybody who's listened to this has ever had a radio background, you know that one of the cardinal rules is don't ask out a listener because she's probably not going to look like anything you have envisioned, and you may be disappointed. She usually sounds, or he, if you're a female DJ, the listener usually sounds better on the phone than he or she actually looks. I hate to say this, it sounds so bad, but it's just, there's a lot of bad things that can happen if you ask out a listener. And it's really easy to kind of get enthralled with someone who likes you because of your voice, and they say nice things when they call you on the radio or when they call you on the telephone and stuff. So one of the cardinal rules, don't ask out a listener. So what did I do? I loved the sound of my wife's voice. We talked for a while. I asked her out, took her to see Aladdin at the theater, and we went to Pizza Hut to have pizza, and that was our first date. Although I did go back to her house and with her mom and dad in the next room, we watched country music television, CMT, back when the music television shows actually, or stations actually played music videos. We sat there on the couch and did that for a little while on our first date, but I fell in love with her. I asked her to marry me. And shortly after we got married, we auditioned for a community theater's musical revue. Now, Kayla had never been in a show. She loved them like I did, and that was one of the things that connected us together and that we really got connected with was a love for Disney and a love for theater. We had both seen Aladdin. At the time, I was wanting to be an animation artist for Disney. That's what I was wanting to go to school to do. I had seen Phantom. It was my favorite show. Her favorite show was Les Miserables. In fact, when we went to New York City and I saw that cat show that reawakened my love for theater, Kayla went with the school group right as we were leaving. They were coming the same day that we were leaving, they were coming in to New York. And she saw her first Broadway show within days of me seeing my first Broadway show. And then we always call that a near miss. And then we were at the same performance before we met of Phantom of the Opera in Atlanta at the Fox Theater. Never saw each other, or if I did, I didn't realize it. But, you know, years later, we met and got married. And we auditioned, like I said, for a community theater's musical revue. Kayla had never been in a show, and she was a natural on stage. My wife is a fantastic singer and a fantastic actress. She'll just get right into character. And so from that moment on, we began to immerse ourselves into everything that we could at that theater, and then later on in other theaters, because we both just fell in love with it. It became something that was not something we did, but was something that we were. And then we got into directing. We were in a show in Greenville, South Carolina with the Greenville Children's Theater. They are known for doing really good shows. And Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat was one of those soundtracks that we just listened to over and over again, knew it like the back of our hands, and it was our favorite show at the time. And they were doing a production of it, so we decided we would drive there every night for rehearsal if we got a part. And so we tried out, and I ended up getting the part of Benjamin, and she was in the ensemble. And it was a very good show. We had a wonderful time, made some new friends, but we decided we'd like to direct that show. And it became something that was on our radar, that when we were able to direct and felt confident with it, that would be our first show. And while it was not our first show that we directed officially, we did a Broadway review, the part three of the Broadway review that we first got on stage with. We directed that part three, but the first real show was Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, and we directed that, had a wonderful time with that. So part of my falling in love with the theater, part of what makes me an actor, it's just been a chain of events all through my life that have built upon each other, that have compounded upon each other, and great and wonderful memories. now it's something that I can share with my wife, and that just deepens it even further for me. It may be different for you. So I looked at that, and I looked at all of my history, and I said, but Michael, is that really what makes you an actor? Those are experiences, but what drives you? What drives me to time and time again volunteer my time and effort for something I'm not getting paid for, to create something some people may like, some people won't, to create something people won't understand why I'm doing this? What drives me to do it anyway? What has created, besides those experiences, what is it about the theater that I love so much? And it's everything. It's everything about the theater. The first time I stepped into the stage light with the actual intent to create something memorable to both me and the audience, I was just hooked. You talk about getting bit by the bug, and I was. It's happened so many times. If you're listening to this, it happened to you at some point. You got bit by that bug. Bitten. Yes, I'll try to use correct English if I can get my mouth around the southern dialect that you're listening to. Some of it's personality. Growing up, I wanted to be a stand-up comedian, so I've always loved an audience. I've always loved doing something for them that made them happy. I've just always been that guy that had to be throwing out a punchline. I was never the class clown. I was very introverted. I still am very introverted, and I think that's true of a lot of actors too. Psychologically, we're able to come out of our shell on a stage, and that allows us a window to do that. But to be honest, I love being told I did a good job. So I guess the answer is yes. I suppose I am a bit of a narcissist. And if you don't know what the word narcissist means, it simply means someone who's full of themselves. They love to hear their own voice. They love to see their work. And a lot of actors don't love to see their work. Tony doesn't like to watch any video of her work or anything like that. She'll tell you that. I don't know that she doesn't just like to watch it. I think she may refuse to watch it. But I do think that most actors have a little bit of narcissism in them. Some have a lot of it in them. So I started thinking, what drives me? What is it in my soul that I love? So as you're listening to this, I want you to take note of the things I'm about to say. And I want you to, if you're driving, don't close your eyes. But if you're not driving and you can, maybe close your eyes and try to put yourself in the experience and try to experience those things from your memory and see if these things are things that we might have in common, and if they don't bring back a recollection and that wonderful euphoria that a true actor will get when thinking about the theater. I love the hard work that goes into a show. I hate it when someone asks me, do you still do those skits? It's not a skit. It is a group of people coming together, all different sorts of personalities, all different skill sets, all different histories and experience coming together to do something in common and create a work of art, physically and mentally. It's not just a skit. And I can't stand it when people say that. And when they do say that, they generally are not trying to insult me. I have had a couple of people who will say that with a little bit of a smirk on their face, and you think, yeah, I'm going to smack you. But most of the time when someone says something like those little skits or something similar to that, they're not trying to be an insult. They're not trying to insult you. They're just, they don't know what else to call it. It's hard work. That's what I do when I get on the stage or when I walk into a theater. I begin working hard, and I love that. I love the hard work that goes into a show. Although it's not preferable, I still love the magic of not being ready the night of final dress and somehow pulling it off on opening night. Every actor has that story. Every actor probably has several of those stories if you've got a few shows under your belt. You never want that. I mean, you want it to be ready, although the superstition is you never want to have a perfect final dress rehearsal. That's supposedly bad luck. And the final dress is never perfect. Nothing's ever perfect. No performance is ever perfect. And you'd love to know that you're ready. But at the same time, there's just something great about when you're not. And you go home and you're freaking out and you're going over that script over and over and over again, trying to make sure that you get it right. You're going over all of your blocking and all of your lines and doing all this because it just went so awful on Final Dress, and you've got to open the next night or in a couple of days, however your theater works it. And then the curtain opens and it's like magic. It's great. I love that. I love that about theater. I love the characters. And I'm not talking about the ones that are written in the scripts. I'm talking about the real characters, the personalities that make every show an adventure. And sometimes they make a show a nightmare. But I love it. Life would be so boring if there weren't characters. And there is nowhere on earth as wrought with wonderful and amazing different characters than the live stage. I love that. I love the thrill of waiting for the cast list to be posted, and not just to see what part I got, if any, but to see who I got to work with, who I get to work with. And even when I've done so much theater now that a lot of times I do still audition for the shows I'm going to be in, but sometimes I'm friends with the director and they'll call me up a little early and I'll know if I've got the part, so I may know the part that I've got ahead of when the script cast list is going to be posted. But I still love waiting to see who the rest of them are, because I never ask. I just want to see when it's posted and I see that list of this person's playing this person, and oh, I get to work with them again, and this person gets to play this person, and who's that? I've never heard of them. I get to meet somebody new, a new member of my family. I love that. I just always have. It's just one of those moments. It's like Christmas. When I know the cast list is coming up the next day, it's hard for me to sleep, just like a kid on Christmas Eve. Now, I can't dance. I've said it a million times on this show. I cannot dance, but I love learning the choreography, especially at the very beginning. I like watching it all come together, but I like seeing the choreographer and tell us the moves for the very first time. Again, you do not want to see me moving on the stage in a choreographed manner. And so I don't do it very often. But when I do, I give it 100%. Even though I know it's not going to be pretty, it's going to be my best. And I love that. I love the smell of a theater. It's that smell that every theater that I've ever been in has, whether it's professional or amateur. Every theater has the smell. You know what I'm talking about. It's musty carpet. This needed to be replaced a decade ago. It's dust in the wings. It's sawdust during set builds. It's the smell that hot lights create. The phrase blood, sweat, and tears had to have been termed by a person experienced in the theater. I have sweat, I have bled, and I have cried. And I'm not talking about crying on stage. I've done plenty of that in character, but I've cried in the wings. I've cried when friends of mine got bad news just before a performance. I've cried during the private prayer that me and my wife try to have before every performance. We get together and have just a prayer between the two of us when we're going to be in a performance together. And that's a special time for me, and I'll tear up during that time. I've cried watching my son perform the role of Oliver, and it was hard for me to perform Fagin at first with an audience out there because I'm a very emotional person. I have shed blood on stage building sets. Whoever came up with that term had to have been a theater person. As an actor, I love the rehearsals where someone starts laughing and it's infectious to the point that you can't continue for several minutes. I hate that when I'm directing, but I love it when I'm an actor. Until the director gets angry and tells everybody to settle down and get serious. But we all have those stories. Something happens, and sometimes it's the craziest, stupidest thing. Like someone says a word the wrong way, and it's just the funniest thing that was ever uttered in human language to this cast. And then everybody starts trying to do their lines, and someone starts giggling, and it gets to the next person, and they start giggling, and you do the straight face. Okay, here we go. All right, start over. Let's do this. We're serious. You start delivering your line and can't finish it. Oh, it makes a director angry. And I'm one of those directors that gets angry because you've got a time frame you're trying to work into, and it's absolutely the most awesome thing when you're an actor on the stage and that stuff happens. I love those moments. I love the sadness at the last bow. And as everyone gets one last hug at the end of the cast party, and I love the sense of what do I do now that hits in the days that follow. I could name a million things about the theater life that I love, and they've all been an orchestra of sorts, of memories that are the foundation of what makes me an actor. That's what I kind of figured out when I was asking myself this question. It's the experience, and it's the people, and the family, and the effort. It's busting your butt to build a fantastic set and nearly coming to tears when you're the one who has to tear it apart at the strike. It's finally getting down stage right and stage left and knowing the difference between upstage and downstage. And it's the appreciation reserved for only a few of us. As I wrap this up, I haven't looked at the time. I don't know that this won't be one of the shorter episodes, but if you're an actor, you get me. You know what I'm talking about, and you know the feelings. You know the experience. You know the excitement. Sure, get used to people not understanding why you do it, especially if you do it for free like I do. People aren't going to understand. I've had people ask me time and time again, why do you do it? And what do you say? I like it. Well, they're not understanding. To them, they don't want to do something that they feel like you're doing something you're not getting anything out of. People ask me all the time, you get paid to do that? No. Well, why do you do it? I am getting paid in a different way. I'm not getting paid cash. If you're listening to this and you are a professional actor, God bless you. You are doing what you love, I hope, and you're getting paid to do it. But most of the people who are going to be listening to this podcast are people who are going to be on the stage because it is in their heart. And if you're getting paid, yes, I'm sure it's in your heart, but they're doing it because it's in their heart and their pay is the experience. That's what they're getting out of it. And you're not going to always be able to make everybody understand. What makes an actor is not education. It's not a degree. Those things are great. I suggest if you're looking to make acting a career, you get an education. Go to school, learn under the best. That's wonderful, but that's not what makes you an actor. An actor is made by experience and love. Some actors are better than others, but it's what you feel in your heart when you step into the light from the darkness of the wings that defines whether you are one of those few. I'm an actor because God created me as one of the few. Now, since I have kind of waxed poetic and I've gotten really kind of personal, I suppose, in this episode, I want to share something with you. I don't do this a lot. I don't share my own work very often unless it's live. I just don't like to do it. I'm one of those people who tries my best to be humble, and I'll hear myself doing things and saying things that just seem really, really arrogant to me. So I don't really post a lot of my own work. But I'm going to post this one because I've had a couple of people ask me, have you posted this or played this on your show yet? And when I say no, they say, why not? So I'm gonna, since this is a personal thing. You've heard me talk several times about the very first play that I wrote. It's called Mr. Long Said Nothing. In that show, there is a scene, it's a church scene, where the father and the daughter are gonna sing a song that I think I wrote that it was an original song by James, who was the father. Anyway, that doesn't matter. Anyway, it's a song called Picking Up the Pieces, and they're really kind of hesitant about doing it because back in the days, this show takes place in the early 1900s, and it's more of a contemporary style piece for the time, and they're worried about playing it in the church, even though it has a Christian theme to it. It's more along the lines of a country song, but they need some music for the service for various reasons, and they play it, and it only gets half played in the show because some people get angry, get up, and it creates really what is the big moment in the show. So you never hear all of it. And when I first wrote the show, I only wrote one verse because that was all that was needed. Well, several people said, Michael, you've got to finish that song. I enjoy hearing the first part of it in the show, but I want to hear an actual full song of Picking Up the Pieces. So need to write a second verse. And I kicked it around a little while. And recently I made a CD for my mom for Christmas. And I decided to write the other verse and finish out the song. And I did. Now, the recording of this is not the most professional. It is me at the piano. In the show, he's playing a guitar, but this was me at the piano. It just had me. And this is about as personal as it gets to me. And I hope you like the song. It's called Picking Up the Pieces. So after I finish telling you how you can get in touch with us, we're going to close out the show. Instead of closing it out with our normal backup music and out music, we'll end the show with the full version of Picking Up the Pieces. I hope you enjoy it. Here's how you can have a question, comment, or suggestion. Drop us a line at our email address, c1gfeedback@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 706-389-0401. You can also reach us by clicking on the contact page at our website over at www.q1go.com, where you can stream the show straight from the site or click on one of the subscription links. The show notes are there, and we've also given you a way to get your very own Q1Go swag. Don't forget to like our Facebook page at facebook.com/Q1Go. And if you like what you've heard, please, can you tell I'm reading this? If you like what you've heard, consider sharing us with your theater community. Until next episode, I'm Mike Blackston. Thanks for making Q1Go the theater show a part of your playlist.
All at once my world just fell to pieces. And it seemed like everywhere I turned, the answers never came, so I learned to hide. I recall a lesson Daddy taught me. When you fall and break apart, you know it's God who takes a heart and makes it right. So Daddy, I'm picking up the pieces of the broken mess that used to be my life. Remember you taught me about salvation, how my Savior gave himself as sacrifice. And remember how you told me I could always count on him to hold me tight. So Daddy, I'm picking up the pieces, picking up the pieces of my life. I'm not what you'd call too complicated, but the puzzle that I've come to be has scattered all the parts of me inside. I know that to pull myself together, there is only one sure thing for me: get down, praying on my knees and cry. So Daddy, I'm picking up the pieces of the broken mess that used to be my life. Remember you taught me about salvation, how my Savior gave himself as sacrifice. And remember how you told me I could always count on him to hold me tight. So Daddy, I'm picking up the pieces, I'm picking up the pieces of my life. So Daddy, I'm picking up the pieces of the broken mess that used to be my life. Remember you taught me about salvation, how my Savior gave himself a sacrifice. And remember how you told me I could always count on him to hold me tight. So Daddy, I'm picking up the pieces, I'm picking up the pieces of my life.